Hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the endarkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyond Ananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hi there, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the endarkened corridors of power and shine light ahead of us to where evolution is leading. The purpose of Wiki Politiki is to bring left and right, front and center, to face the music and dance together. In other words, to address issues rather than defend positions. Well, once again this week, the news headlines are dominated by the entrenched oppositional positions of the two political parties. And yet, and I know I sound like a broken record here, I've said this before, behind the scenes, awakening elements on all sides are seeking what we are calling the sane and sacred center, a way to bring Americans together around the virtues and values that the 90% of us who are not sociopaths hold in common. In fact, here in California, there is actually a new party emerging called the Common Sense Party. And if there's anything we need, it's uncommon common sense. As their website says, quote, "Our state, California, used to take pride in our infrastructure, education, environmental preservation, health, and safety. For decades, these investments enabled mobility up the economic and social ladder for individuals and rapid growth for the state. But an increasingly partisan environment has created bad public policy, stifling innovation, slowing infrastructure investment, jeopardizing public welfare, and compromising California's status as a leader in the world. We resolve to elevate the interests of Californians above partisan politics so we can renew California's full promise," unquote. Well, our guest this week is conservative transpartisan activist Michael Maxenti. He's a key advisor to the Common Sense Party. He's a successful entrepreneur in the printing business. He decided to reach out several years ago, 10 years ago, to young followers of the Occupy movement, and the result was his platform, Rebellious Truths, a nonprofit focused on galvanizing, educating, and engaging American youth in our political process, incorporating YouTube and social media. Michael's executive position spans several industries, including private companies as well as nonprofits. His expertise covers every stage from startup to rapid growth, crisis management to turnarounds, and to sustainable growth in new markets. He was also president of the Max Company, where he consulted on media, printing, and publishing for more than 10 years. Currently, his passion is bringing Californians, and ultimately Americans, across the political divide so that we could use the energy we have spent fighting and opposing one another in a political tug of war to create a tug of peace where we all pull together in the same direction to achieve what the vast majority of us want. So welcome, Michael.
Thank you, Steve. A conservative activist, that would be something I left about 10 years ago that my friends would know me as. Now, most of those conservatives think I've gone to the dark side, the left side. But I like to think of myself as on the outside of both.
Well, that's good. You're on the outside of both of those positions, but you're on the inside of the sane and sacred center that we'll talk about shortly. Speaking of which, You know, several weeks ago, I mentioned this phrase, the saint and sacred center view, and you definitely seem to resonate with it. So from your perspective, what does that phrase, saint and sacred center, mean to you?
Well, I think the understanding of sacred would be the important thing. I think everybody can understand what would be sane, but sacred is something that I think we feel from the heart and go to our deepest levels of understanding of humanity, and the sacredness of where we are, each of us individually, as well as the sacredness of all of life, including our planet Earth. And to find a sane and sacred center that people could feel comfortable in so that we could come together. Because as I've said for many years now, the solutions will be found when the people come together.
That makes a lot of sense. That certainly makes a lot of sense. And we've seen, if you've seen the documentary, The Social Dilemma, people have really started to understand how these divisive narratives are fed as they feed into some of our subconscious emotional needs and take us further away from a middle ground where we can rehumanize one another. So this saint and sacred center, that you're absolutely right, the sacred is something that we hold above and beyond the ordinary in life, something that's bigger than us. For some people, it's a religious expression. For other people, it's the sacredness of the web of life. And what I sense that you're looking to do in bringing people together is finding a common sense of this sacred. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes, actually it is. And the common sense party, what we are truly trying to do is to create a new model that will make the existing models of political organizing, if you will, parties, obsolete. And as Elon Musk has done with both the automobile industry and the space industry, you know, the automobile industry didn't go away and the space industry didn't go away. But he created a new model that dramatically changed those models. And that's what we hope to do here. We hope to create and build a model that will be a funnel for the roughly 70%, maybe hopefully as many as 80% of Americans, so that we can find those deep-seated common values, a place where it can be sane and sacred, so that people of different values who have different worldviews can come in and find a place where we can have dialogue and reach decision-making positions. But the key to the common sense party is trying to focus on just the next step so that we can create that. And the next step is, how do we create a vehicle of a party that will allow for independent thinking people to be able to have a vehicle to get elected and then allow the electorate to decide whether they like those positions or not, based on principles, not adherence to orthodoxy.
You know, one of the things that everybody has observed is the whole third party idea. My joke is that we don't need a new third party in this country. We need a new first party, and the idea is getting people weaned away from this idea that only one of these two parties can win. One of the reforms, and we can talk more about some of the electoral reforms that the Common Sense Party is proposing, but one of the reforms is ranked choice voting, so that you can vote for a third party and then have one of the major parties, quote-unquote, as your second choice, so that you don't feel like you're out on a limb and you've totally lost your vote. Tell us more about some of the ideas. You mentioned that this electoral reform concept that the Common Sense Party was putting forth. Say more about that.
Well, before I do, let me correct you on something.
Okay.
Because we won't make any platform planks. Mm-hmm. We won't take an official party position on any issue until we become an official party. We have approximately 20,000 members right now. We need to get about another 50,000 to become an official party. Mm-hmm. We've got all the paperwork done, all that. Once the party is an official, then we will have in place the new modern-day ways to communicate and vote and discuss and debate issues. But unless an issue, whether it be specific to ranked choice voting or specific to others, until they can achieve at least what we call a supermajority, which is defined by at least 75% or more of our membership, our entire membership, to vote for something, it won't become, quote, an official plank like you hear others, unless it becomes something that the vast majority of people already agree on, and then we will become a vehicle to help that get implemented. Until such time, we will be a platform and a vehicle for good, robust discussions with integrity to help bring forth information, help bring forth the breadth of discussion on issues that's not now being had, and allow people to make those choices based on particular candidates.
You know, this is really very interesting because one of the projects that I've been working on for several years is advisory voting National Town Square. And mm-hmm. this would essentially give the people of this country a place where they could voice their vote on issues. So what you're saying is that the Common Sense Party is a similar field. It's a field where the whole purpose behind the party is that we actually reinfuse democracy into democracy, where people can actually voice their opinions and ideas about platform planks. And as these things gain almost universal popularity, those become the platform. So it's really very much a people-designed platform.
Absolutely. And every platform issue doesn't wait 4 years. It's always up as we gain new perspectives, new information, as things are tried and implemented. Yeah. If they're not seen as working, there's a mechanism built into our bylaws, into our system, that will allow at any time for any plank issue to be called up for rediscussion and revoting on, and so that it's an ongoing evolving based on what the people's, as we gain intelligence, as we gain perspective on any issue, it's always open for change and debate. One of the key things is that's how we will avoid an adherence to orthodoxy. That's what we want to be able to bring forth, a voice for the rest of the people who are being locked out of the system because of both of our two major parties. You have to adhere to orthodoxy of theirs before you'll get their endorsement and their mechanisms. For us, we will support candidates who are open-minded, independent-thinking Democrats, Republicans, Libertarians, Green Party, as long as they adhere to principles of being responsible, open, and inclusive. And we have a definition of those, but it's based on principles, and then allow their constituents of their own, whether they're a state assembly or Senate, allow them, the people, to hear them out, vet them, and then make a choice if those things that they choose to put forth as an issue they resonate with and want to support. It's not our place to do that, but it is our place to provide a vehicle for those voices to be heard and for them to have an opportunity to be implemented into action. And in the state of California, there's two major things that we want to take advantage of. One is the way so many people have registered as no party preference, which is independent in California, or those who are currently registered with a party but recognize the need for a third party. We have that mechanism in California to do that, and we will support candidates, whether they be of our party or of another party or of true independents, as long as they adhere to principles, not a particular orthodoxy. They're open-minded, they're inclusive, etc.
You know, it harkens back to this almost archaic concept of public service, that our public servants are actually in the service of the public. rather than these other forces that have seemingly taken over our political system and outflanked the balance of power, outflanked the three branches of government, because I don't think at the beginning they considered the power of money to be as powerful as it has become. Yeah. So how did the Common Sense Party come about, and who founded it?
Well, the original concept, I believe, was really would be laid at the feet of two people, Tom Campbell, who is a former five-term U.S. congressman from Silicon Valley. He served for a couple of years after that in the state of California Senate. But before he actually ran for office, he served as 8 years as the California Director of Finance. Mm-hmm. And before that, he was the dean of the Haas Business School at Cal Berkeley, and he was a tenured professor of law at Stanford. He's a brilliant thinker, and he has a reputation both when he was back in Congress in D.C. and while he worked in California of impeccable integrity. He's one of the most open-minded, kind, gentle leaders I've ever had the pleasure of working with. And another gentleman named John Pimentel, who is also up in Silicon Valley, been in the renewable energy field. He was the assistant, I believe his title was Assistant Secretary of California Transportation for 8 years. So he worked in the bureaucracy, if you will, of California government a number of years ago. And then there's many other people that have been involved in the leadership of the founding. I joined them in November of 2019, a little over a year ago.
Cool. We're about to take a very short break. We'll come back and talk a little bit more about your own background and where we could be going. This is Steve Behrman on Wiki Politiki. Back shortly.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
The United States has the highest rate of incarceration in the world. At the Equal Justice Initiative, we believe mass incarceration has to end. There is this presumption of dangerousness and guilt that gets assigned to black and brown people. We have to confront our history of racial injustice and commit to a new era of truth. There's something better waiting for us, something that feels more like freedom. Truth can inspire change. Please learn more at EJI.org.
We're back with our guest, Michael McSenthy. We're talking about the Common Sense Party and uncommon common sense. And I'm sorry I mislabeled you as a conservative.
Well, that's all right. I was once that.
But I want to talk about that transition. In 2012 or right around thereabouts, during the Occupy movement, you reached out to the young kids in that movement to engage with them. So I'm curious what precipitated that and what you learned and what came from that.
Yeah, let me back up just a brief second. I was considered a Reagan conservative back in 2010. And then a young man who went to work for me as a writer, who I later found out was one of the founders of the Bruin Anarchists. He was an anarchist up at UCLA in graduate school. We ended up being thrown together, finding out of these political differences, having this, what started off as a one-time conversation became every week. after 7 months of that, we came together after peeling back these layers of misunderstanding and recognizing that underneath all of the differences on the surface, we truly shared some real core values. And we agreed to form a partnership and start a nonprofit called Rebellious Truths. And Rebellious Truths' mission statement was to galvanize, educate, organize, and activate the millennial generation and others to lead a responsible revolution to reform our political system. And that was our mission statement, and it continues to be my personal mission statement now for almost for over 10 years. So what we did was when Occupy was going strong in 2012, our YouTube channel is the only thing still up. So if people want to see some of our YouTube videos, where three of them went number one on YouTube of the 17 we produced, they're still available on YouTube. But we had an event called the Sounds of Truth Festival, and we brought in Dr. Richard... where's my head? Sam Richards, Dr. Sam Richards, he did a famous TED Talk that we were introduced to in 2011, and from that it inspired us to come up with an idea to host an event called the Sounds of Truth Festival. And we ended up having this event on July 7th, 2012, where we had 124 representatives. We had representatives, leadership representatives from the Occupy LA, Orange County, San Diego. We had founders of six different Tea Parties around Southern California and a total of 24 Tea Partiers. We had the official Orange County representatives of the Republican Party, Libertarian Party, Democratic Party, Green Party, et cetera, of 124 people there, where we had 16 two-hour-long facilitated dialogue sessions with 8 to 10 people in each, and they were put together of great diversity, and we created a documentary that is available called The Day We Came Together on our YouTube channel that's, like I said, is still up. And to reach out to those groups, it was because we felt that if we could prove that when you pull back these layers of understanding, you get people together and start talking below the surface level, you could begin to realize what we shared, and then from that shared point, you could begin to discuss solutions on problems. When you focused on what the problem was, now let's talk about how we could get there. And many great relationships from that day still exist today between people from the Occupy, people from Tea Parties, and people from all the different political parties. Many of those people are still friends of mine today, and many of them are still in touch with each other. And that was an incredibly eye-opening event.
Well, you know, you mentioned that earlier, the idea that once people are actually connected with each other, once you have the people, and once you have the buy-in, that, you know what, we're going to find these solutions together. Once you have that buy-in, then it becomes a lot easier to actually find a solution. And it sounds like your focus in these dialogues was not so much policy, but in creating relationships.
Yes, and one of the things that's changed over the last, since that was 2012, now we are almost 11 years later, or 10 years later, 9 years later, is how much social media has dramatically widened and entrenched people's beliefs because of, we all know the reasons. The Social Dilemma did a great job of explaining how and it's done and why it's done, all about the money. And that's what leads me to where we're trying to do is what we realize is that there's some wonderful organizations like Living Room Conversations, Braver Angels, and a National Coalition of Dialogue and Deliberation. There's all kinds of effort to bring people together in dialogues. And that is preparing the soil one-on-one within small groups to do that. But on a much broader level, because we don't have a lot of time, we're at a precipice here, we're at a major problem, but on a broader cultural sense, how can we, without trying to change people's minds and hearts, how can we look at the different worldviews held by, if you will, this worldview considered the traditionalist, the modernist, and the postmodern world, which would be representative, if you will, of the millennials. How can we take those existing worldviews and find the essence of the best of those worldviews and avoid those things that are troublesome with them, the pathogens of those, and work together then for solutions? Because we don't have time to change everybody's mind and hearts. That ain't going to happen. But what we can do is learn how to work together by understanding and appreciating and creating something better from both of their values. And let me give you one quick example. It's been over the last 40, 50 years how we've evolved the understanding of what it meant to be a man and what it means to be a woman. When first concepts of man should have show their emotion, should be allowed to cry and be more in touch with their sensitive side, there was a big revolt about that. And when women started saying, we want to stand up and be seen as strong, independent thinking and on our own, there was a big pushback on that. But how that's evolved now is now you see both men and women are much better for it. The men are better now that they're in touch with their emotional side much better than they were before. And women standing up and being strong and bringing their voices into this discussion, women are much more empowered now. Men are much more empowered now. And it's not that we're trying to create these male-female, you know, people. We created something that's better for both. And out of that, we create a new balance that can help us reach new levels of change and building a society that works for vastly more people.
You know, several weeks ago, I interviewed Foster Gamble, who has helped produce the Thrive movies and so on. And in these movies, there's a lot of really amazing solutions on the horizon that relate to free energy, that relate to means of healing, energetic healing, and really great things. And he said that these solutions are all available, and we're in a very treacherous moment right now where we have to make it through this passage in order to get to that point. And if I look at where we are right now, the article I'm working on right now is called If All You Read Is the New York Times, You Don't Have a Clue About What's Going On in Politics, because the mainstream press has taken a very partisan view. I mean, in certain regards, it had to do with opposition to Trump, but I think it also has to do with, the consolidation of media in very, very, very few hands. As somebody who has people on both sides looking, good thing you got two ears. You've got one ear for one side and one ear for the other. Your perspective is different than people who are only getting their news from one side. So I hope you don't mind me saying this, but you told me that in 2020, in the primaries, you voted for Bernie Sanders in the primaries, and you voted for Donald Trump in the election. So I'm curious as to what your intention was, and what do you see in the support of Donald Trump that the mainstream press is simply not looking at, not seeing?
Well, that vote for Bernie was in 2016 primary.
Oh, okay.
And then I voted for Trump. It's a vote against the establishment. It's a vote against both parties. Heck, on the back here in my office is a poster from March 3rd of 2012 where it was titled Party Against Both Parties, because we recognized that it was both the leadership of both parties, not the individuals, not the people out in the country, but the leadership of these two parties that are the establishment who've created or assisted these problems to be to where they're at. And so I voted for Trump as I would have voted for Bernie, and I did in the primary, like I said, but as a disruptor, he shattered the status quo. He gave the people an opportunity to further awaken, whether out of love, hate, or indifference, every single day, and sometimes multiple times in a day, Trump galvanized people into waking up. And that's the first step. If you remember the mission statement, you've got to get people to wake up and start paying attention. And then they can become educated, at least if they start to pay attention. And then they'll become organized and activated to help us collectively change those people behind the scenes of which have the money, these huge globalists and incredibly rich individuals and institutions who are trying to move towards a new path of a one-world government before humanity's ready. I mean, it's a utopian vision of a one-world order, but it's a utopian vision where the people elect their representatives, where the people, they're accountable to the people, not unelected, unaccountable globalists and institutions that want to force this new world order upon us before humanity's ready for it. You know, we've got a lot of growth to go in our evolution towards true individual freedom and equality, and at the same token, the recognition of helping each other and of community. There's much growth necessary. And Charles Eisenstein does a wonderful job of talking about that. And I've been got to know Charles, been following him since 2011, and he's an amazing thinker, and he holds a light through the fog that humanity can navigate towards as we're out here in these small little boats out in this vast sea with these currents and crosswinds that we can't anticipate or see. He holds that lantern of a place that only our hearts know is possible, a place where humanity can thrive, as the Gimbels have a great way of doing that and working on specific steps to get us there. Charles holds the grander vision of that place where our hearts know is possible. And his second major book called Sacred Economics, and then his follow-up to the place our hearts know is possible, and now he's got a couple of books since then, including Climate, A New Story. He truly is a thinker that helps give us that vision of where we can go so that all of humanity can thrive in a beautiful world that where all of life thrives and creates a balance. And I love his work, and I love the vision that he helps us focus on.
You know, going back to what you said earlier, there is a huge difference between a good idea, and I'm using quote marks, I don't know if you can see my quote marks there, a good idea that's imposed from the top down, which seems to be the progressive narrative that we want everybody to wear masks, we want everybody to get vaccinated, all of these things that are, the intention is, well, we're looking out for the collective, but what's being missed is that we humans have free will, and free will is a very key piece to our nature and our destiny. And there's a difference between an imposition from the top down and a realization from the bottom up. And that's what you're talking about. This maturing process has to do with this realization and growing into, I would say, being the citizens that our founding fathers imagined that we would someday be.
Yeah, and they had a vision of where we could be. They obviously were living in their time and in their culture with their where they were, which is obviously by today's standards on many levels we would find despicable. But at their time, that was normal, of most of these practices that they lived. But this understanding, this is where I love the millennials. To me, the millennials, the postmodern, they have so much right. They are dedicated and seeing people on a one-on-one level because they've seen the corruption of what unchecked modernism can do, what unfeathered modernism in the hands of a few can go way off the track with pollution, corruption, the greed, and on and on and on. And that's where the millennials, they really want to reconnect on a one-on-one basis. But their movement, if you will, is somewhat immature, and it needs the balancing of the traditionalists and the modernists. And that's where we can create a balance without losing our idealism. And that's what I like about the millennials and this postmodern, is the idealism of it and the recognition of that it has to be something new that we can create, but we need to create it together, and we can, and we will.
You know, one of my jokes is that all of those isms need to become wasms. That the
yeah.
ism is a rigid position of the past, and you know, I mean, you know, you came from a political ideology that got cultivated. I came from a different political ideology that got cultivated, and at some point, as we began looking at the political new word situation from our different perspectives, when you put all of these perspectives together, you actually get a much more, I think you mentioned diversity as one of the values of the Common Sense Party. And the diversity is not so much having every color and every face represented, but it really represents a diversity of approaches. And nature is simply about diversity, that's how natural systems survive.
Well, and diversity is such a misused term. It's not a superficial term based on color and religions and these surface things. It's got to be much deeper. It's a deeper diversity based on cultural experiences and worldviews. And that's what people lose out. They try to count faces and nationalities and say, well, we're really diverse. Well, but they all graduated from the same elite schools, or they all came from the same neighborhoods. You know, that's not diversity, even though there might be differences in colors and races and religions and that. You've got to have true cultural diversity to create a broad perspective. And the broader the perspective you can bring to an issue, the better solutions you can find.
Exactly. Well, we're going to take another break, and we'll be back again with Michael McSenthy and talk more about uncommon common sense and the Sane and Sacred Center. We'll be back shortly.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
These are the sounds of a dinner. A dinner that almost didn't happen. A dinner now served, thanks to people like you. Due to COVID-19, 17 million more Americans may face hunger. Feeding America is helping our neighbors in need. And if you're able, you can too. Donations are being accepted at feedingamerica.org/coronavirus. Brought to you by the Ad Council and Feeding America. 200 Food Bank Strong.
Okay, we're back with our guest, Michael McSenthy. We're talking about uncommon common sense. We're talking about creating a sane and sacred center. So many people want this. More than 70% of people, 76%, it was the last figure I heard, would prefer that we work together, and yet we have these very polarizing political ideologies. So given, I think you and I each recognize that there's a spiritual center, regardless of what we call it. In a recent conversation, you had mentioned that you had just started reading David Ray Griffin's book about process theology, and that offered some perspective on bringing this this spiritual perspective to the world at large. So what was it in that book that struck you as being really important?
Well, as I said, yes, I've just recently started it, but it struck me a chord deeply with me because it talks about the concept of life, God, whatever religion people come from a perspective, how there's a commonality there that God and life tries to move us forward by enticement and enticing us how to move forward, because this concept of an understanding of free will is hard for people to say, how can we have such horrific things have gone on historically and currently if it's a good God and a loving God and all of this, and blending that concept with free will and acknowledgement of all these bad things going on, and then is to recognize that if you're truly independent and individuals, we're weaving a tapestry here, and for every action there's a reaction. And that was one of the points that we were talking about that I made, is this concept of adjacent possible and how the adjacent possible is so intertwined with progress theology and with this concept out of the developmental politics about understanding these three major worldviews and how we can move to a new worldview. And they all work together to say, what is the absolute possibility of us moving forward? And this adjacent possible says, focus on that which is in the shadow of future right now. Not trying to go too far. And that's where, and I use this example with my libertarian friends. You guys have this great vision of this utopia where we'd like to go, but there's no step B. We're on A, and you're trying to take us to Z without trying to say all we can do is go to step B. And so many people, this postmodern is the same thing. If people want to go to these utopian visions, but they don't say, how do we get to the very next step so that we can actually get there? They're focused on, well, I can't do this because we've got to go all the way to there, and so I can't support this. Well, they've got to focus on the adjacent possibility. What is that next step? And that's where this process theology, I believe, the concepts of that I'm beginning to understand, help us understand that and then look at the different worldviews and find that adjacent possible for the very next step. And that is where the Common Sense Party is, that adjacent possible. It can be that next step. And then as we take that next step, new possibilities will open up. And then we take the next step. But we have to have a vision of where we want to go. And that's where that vision that I mentioned from Charles Eisenstein and others and Thrive has, where we can go that's a place for all of us to thrive. Because these people with this one world order currently, with this authoritarian oppressive view of from a top down, as you mentioned, I've said for years, and know that the actual books and movies were written for the Hunger Games to show us the long-term consequences of this current path and the shorter-term consequences of the path that we're on with this authoritarian type top down can be seen in The Handmaid's Tale. And, you know, and it's like, hello, folks, wake up, you know, to how quickly and easily those you love can totally take away your liberties and freedoms. And the vision that you thought they were taking us to is not at all one that all of humanity is going to thrive. It's one that a very few will thrive.
You know, that's really what's really interesting is that this period of time has been a period of political education. And, you know, those who read the New York Times alone have no idea what's going on. To me, it was a big clue in 2016, the Republican debates, and how poorly Jeb Bush did. how poorly he did. And at that point, it became clear to me that the Republican electorate, influenced more by the Tea Party movement than perhaps anything else, had long abandoned the idea of this George Bush Sr. and George Bush Jr. Dick Cheney globalist agenda. And because the Obama administration simply largely continued those same policies,
expanded on it.
Yeah, they pinned the tail on the donkey.
Yeah.
The Democrats were held accountable for everything that had gone on, in American imperialism and empire. After all, it was the majority of the Democrats as well who voted for the Iraq War. Only a few people abstained from that and voted against it. And so what happened was, as you said earlier, the Trump vote was a vote for the disruption of the status quo, which involved both political parties. And this is something that I think the conservative electorate got clued into a lot more quickly than the progressives. And so what the Biden administration is, it's many things, but it's certainly an attempt to return to the Clinton-Bush-Obama status quo. And ultimately, it's not really a sustainable system. So as we're looking at where we are right now, what do you see as the most promising signs that we're going to get through this and get to the other side?
To me, the most promising sign will be how these, in just two short weeks, not even two full weeks yet, they return to those same people and the same thinking that was on the path that you mentioned, that started with the Bushes and then was continued on with the Obamas, this acceleration on this one world path. The awakening that's going on very quickly, that these are not what the liberal, if you will, moderate Democrats were signing up for. They were, these kind of oppressive policies and return to that is not what they were signing up for. And so I think what makes me excited about where we are is this awakening is accelerating, is continuing and accelerating, so that people will wake up again and come together. I have been saying for a number of years, about four, the big election that we will be ready for is in 2024, when enough people, that vast 60-70% or more, have woken up to the reality is that we need truly a president who represents the majority of the people, who is that open-minded person who can lead the kind of discussions and debates that truly can help us elevate to a new world vision, and not one that says, yeah, unify around my message, either unify and accept my position or shut up. And that's kind of been the position for the last many of our presidents, is, yeah, we talk all about unity, but it's unify around what I think and what my party says, and if you don't agree with it, shut up. Or you can resist and do whatever you want, but we're just going to roll you over. And that's not working. So I'm excited. People are waking up. We'll get there. I'm confident that we will get there, because people are waking up, and then with that, we will come together and find the solutions necessary. One thing I want to go back to a second before we go up, you had mentioned this a couple times, and that is what I refer to as our go-to sources. I get asked a lot, well, what are your go-to sources for information? As you've mentioned about, if you only read the New York Times, or you only read the Wall Street Journal, or Breitbart News, or Fox News, or CNN, if you only, I'm the opposite. I try to be a broad funnel. I try to listen to as broad a funnel of information and perspectives as I can daily. I monitor on a daily over 150 to 200 emails that come in from newsletters and other sources of vastly different, from left groups all the way to conservative right groups and in between. And I try to constantly be reading a broad spectrum. So I like to think of it not a go-to source, but I have a big funnel that I monitor, and I try to stay abreast of thinking from a broad perspective. And whenever somebody says X on one side of an issue, I try to go find sources from the totally different perspective and see what they say about it. And then go find a third source somewhere in another perspective. And I encourage people to broaden their funnel, not have a go-to source, but have a go-to funnel.
That sounds like a really great plan. And you and I both have friends and acquaintances who are very specifically on one side, and they seem closed off to hearing anything that's contradictory to what they already believe. You talked about the adjacent possible, which is a fascinating concept, the idea that there are these small steps that enable us to move toward, perhaps slowly but steadily, toward a more desirable future. So in terms of people who are perhaps entrenched in a side or a belief system and have one source, what is the adjacent possible to help people take another step and at least read about or entertain other points of view? What do you see as a transitional step there?
My favorite step to recommend to people to begin with is a website called allsides.com. All Sides gives you quickly, one, there's an important bias guide that I highly encourage people. I was in media, basically on the media side for 20 years, and before that I was on the advertising marketing side for 20 years before that. I encourage people, when you go to their site, allsides.com, take the media bias quiz, because you'll be amazed at how subtle this bias can be and how you think you understand your bias. I doubt you understand it anywhere near what you think. But All Sides, besides having this great media bias guide also, you can go to their newsfeed homepage, and on any story of the moment, literally they will be able to give you five sources, the mainstream sources, that you can click on and read for yourself what they're saying to their audience. Instead of listening to your go-to source tell you what somebody else said, what they're doing, read what they're doing for yourself and then decide it. Don't let it go through their bias filter to tell you what they're doing, what they're thinking, what they're saying and intending. Read it for yourself, what they're saying to their own audience. And on the home feed, you can see a hard left, centrist, soft right, hard right, what they're saying to their audience about that same issue. And it really will begin to help open up people's eyes to see the diversity of thinking. And then you can begin to see a more holistic view. I like to give the example to people is like we've all sat at a sporting event with our favorite team watching a call on the field be made. And let's say it was a receiver, and he gets called for pass interference, and it's against your team, and everybody's upset, and the announcer's going, I don't believe that was not a good call, and it's devastating to the outcome of your team in the game. Well, now they show two or three instant replays, and they confirm this was a terrible call. Now they get around to that fifth view, oh my, he actually had a grab on his jersey and held him back. It was actually a good call. And if you just stopped at the first, second, or third, sometimes in baseball fields, I've seen as many as 10 different views, and if you didn't go all to the ultimate views, you wouldn't have seen how that call actually was a good call, opposite of what you and all those other perspectives had first thought. And we've all had that experience.
Yeah, I think that this is really a training, and it's funny, I'm finding that, of course, it used to be very easy for progressives to look at Fox News and say, well, this is clearly propaganda and bias. But it's just as easy for people on the conservative side, and then I think a growing number of progressives, to look at how the New York Times, for example, phrases things. You know, and they will always use the discredited RFK Jr., or they'll use an epithet like that. And once you begin to identify the bias on your own side, that's very humbling. And it really allows you to recognize that so much of news really is propaganda. And so the fake news epithet, it had a lot to it.
Well, there was a key word you used there, propaganda, which most people say, oh, we don't, our government and in our country, we don't use propaganda. One of the most effective tools of propaganda, which was started years and years ago, before World War One even, but propaganda, the most effective tool is what they don't show you, what they don't tell you, the stories they hide from you. Those are the most offensive forces of sources of propaganda, because you aren't even aware of it. And so you don't think it exists when somebody else brings it up, or when it is brought up on your news sources, you're told that it's nothing but a lie and it's all political, you know, and all that stuff. You know, this term conspiracy theorist, that was invented by our CIA to deflect people from their learning about the things out of the Warren Commission and Kennedy's assassination. And they've used that effectively to dismiss conspiracy theories that have proven out to be far more accurate than anything the public was led to believe.
Thank you, Michael McCente. We very much enjoyed having you on WikiPolitiki today.
Well, thank you, Steve.
A good perspective on our new Common Sense Party. This is Steve Behrman. I'm back with you next week on WikiPolitiki.
Thank you again.